Blog Talk Radio.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another fun, exciting week of boxing. We are back in the building. Kell Brook week, Triple G week. What more can I say? But right now, I want to dive into last night. Last night was a great fight put on by Robert Easter Jr. Sergio Mora versus Daniel Jacobs didn't even excite me last night, honestly. It was the Robert Easter Jr. fight. It was absolutely excellent. They fought to the end. And usually I don't agree with judges, Jarrell, but this time I agree with the judges 100%, totally, because Robert Easter Jr. was trying to put him out. And yeah, he just kept holding and holding and holding and holding, especially in that 12th round. I wish Easter would have fought, threw some energy and swung and just got that hit, but there was a couple times in the 12th round he could have put him down easily, and I wish the ref would have actually took a point away from the other guy for holding, because the holding was getting ridiculous.
They were both sitting in each other's faces for a few parts of the fight where they were exchanging blow for blow. It was a very exciting fight. I agree with the outcome of it, though, for sure.
I mean, I think Easter Jr. should have. I definitely was jumping up and down saying finishing, but at the last round when he didn't finish him, but in the back of my head, I was like, okay, I'm thinking that at least two out of three of these judges are going to see that Easter was going for the kill shot, and the other guy was just trying to hold on and win by points. And he knew it was a close fight. So if you're a judge and you know the fighter knows it's a close fight and he's just holding on for dear life, you're most likely going to give it to the other guy because he's trying to guarantee the win.
Yeah, Robert did rock him a couple times where he almost went down. The guy's knee was like an inch away from the ground one time, and somehow he just had really good balance and stayed up. So I don't want to say it's luck. I don't want to say it's luck that he stayed up. But you don't see that happen too often where somebody gets hit that hard and their legs buckle that close to the ground and their knee just doesn't touch. So he must have had some mean core strike to stay up.
Yeah, he did good. And I didn't like the look on his face. He seemed disappointed. I mean, I'd be disappointed after a tough loss, but I know he had to know inside that the judges were going to go his way, being that he was the one that almost went down. And he was the one that was doing more holding than anybody.
Yeah, and he's the one that had the belt too, right? So sometimes the person that has the belt, they feel that they just have to win by points, or they have to that the other fighter has to prove hands down that they're better than them. And fights like this, that might not be the case. You might have to go to war. You might have to go to battle with this person because Robert was hungry.
Yes, Robert has been hungry for a while. He left the streets at Toledo a couple years ago, actually called Adrian Broner and told him, man, get me out of here. If you get me out of here, I promise I'll make you a champion. And he kept good on his word last night and handled his business very thoroughly. And as far as for the second fight didn't really interest me as much. I knew the outcome. It was funny, though, to see Sergio Mora taunt him. And he kept on, you know, taunting him over and over again. And I could tell it was frustrating Jacobs. What I didn't like from Jacobs, though, Jarrell, was when he went down a couple times, I noticed he pushed down with his forearm. If you're going to knock a man down, like knock or punch, like to me that's whack that you got to push with forearms. That's not boxing to me. That's really
boring. He did that a lot throughout the whole fight. He was trying to set him up by pushing him in the right position so he could throw those big hooks, those bombs that he kept missing with. So Sergio did an okay job with the head movement and not getting hit with the majority of those power punches, but at the same time his balance was terrible. His balance was terrible. His like his legs were taken from him before the fight even started, and so every time he got touched, his legs would wobble or he would get pushed back. He just couldn't stand his ground. Either Jacobs was that strong, or more. I'm not too sure. He might have been trying to pick his shots and back out of there quick enough to where he doesn't get hit, but the running tactic didn't work for him last night.
Yeah, it was actually kind of frustrating to fight. Like, I mean, honestly, I'm trying to be mean at all, but I honestly would have rather Easter Jr. and the other guy been the main event. It seemed
main
like
main event for sure.
Yeah, those guys were like the undercard last night. And Easter Jr. was the main event. I'd love to see that again.
Yeah, it was a good fight, and they probably will have some type of rematch for that later down the road. Yeah, the Jacobs Moore fight, it was a slow paced fight, just because Moore was trying to do the stick and move thing, and then Jacobs was trying to be a predator. He was trying to walk him down. He was trying to get in close, put a shoulder on him, put a forearm on him, find him with that, and then take that half step back and throw those big power shot. So his strategy just took a long time. He probably could have even put him down and finished him off before he did. Would it go to like the seventh or eighth round or something like that?
Yeah, it was like six or seven. And then what was also frustrating was, like, you know, like I kind of, like I said earlier, it was just like, even when he was walking him down, though, remember he was, like, not swinging. He was just kind of looking at him and, like, fake swing. It's like, dude, if you go walking down, like, swing. And then, like, the couple punches that he threw were, like, so awkward and they missed. It was, like, really no good clean punches to the face where, like, the fight before where you was like, damn. That, like, it was just, like, it was flopping.
Yeah. And I think the difference was the jab. Jacob, I didn't see Jacob throw barely any jabs. You know, he was almost every shot he threw was going for a knockout punch. He didn't throw any lighter punches, no straight punches before those to set up for the knockout punches. So Sergio Moro was dancing around the ring using his head movement, and he really didn't have those types of punches are easier to see. Because they are from the power. You have to build that punch up before you throw it. So Moore could probably see those punches becoming before you even established them. But, yeah, you're right. Jacobs, I wasn't impressed with him. You know, you knew he was supposed to win that fight hands down. He even said to himself that he has nothing to prove with that fight and that it's going to be an easy fight, and he's already looking forward to the next one. So whenever you know that you're going to win hands down like that, you should go ahead and put in the work, put in those lighter jabs, set them up, and put them out earlier than what you did instead of playing with them, taunting them, not even throwing any punches until you get close enough to throw those types of hooks and uppercuts.
I mean, sitting there looking at it like, did he even, like, train for that fight like that? It's just, like, so sloppy.
That looked like one of my amateur fights with the footwork and stumbling around the ring and more falling down five times. You know, it's just half those didn't even look like, you know, powerful knockdowns. It looked like he skidded the back of his head and pushed him down a few times. So it just looked real sloppy for being on the canvas that much. Without any clean power shots to the face to drop somebody.
Yeah, in my opinion, none of his knockdowns were like boxing knockdowns. They were like push downs, elbow downs.
With the forearm.
There was nothing impressive. And my thing is, okay, even if you have nothing to prove in this fight, it's still a time to get some work. Because with fighters, you know, you could be a good fighter, but you could still, and have a nice fan base, but you could still be out of work for a whole year. So anytime you got a chance to get back in that ring, get some work in, get another paycheck, you should take advantage of that opportunity. You shouldn't go in there, like, slugging and half-stepping. Like, that really frustrated me. Kind of like,
Definitely if you're the main event. Especially if you're the main event trying to win that new fan base. Because it seemed like, what's his name, Robert Jr.? It seemed like everybody in the stands was his fans. Because he gave a shout-out to Toledo after the fight, and everybody went crazy. So they must have been there for him, you know?
That's what I'm saying. Like, Daniel Jacobs did nothing to impress him. It was sick. I was really frustrated with that. Like, honestly, I didn't even – like, I started doing stuff on the internet because, like, after the third round, I'm like, come on, man. Like, this is supposed to be, like, fun, like, boxing. Matter of fact, ESPN had a Glory Kickboxing on. I actually turned to the ESPN and started watching the Glory Kickboxing instead.
Oh, so you didn't even sneak all the way through that, huh? It was a slow fight with an outcome that we already knew was going to happen. So it was hard to sit there and watch more, keep getting pushed down like that.
Yeah, that's the key. Push down, not punch down. Push down. If he would have got if Daniel Jacobs went out there and totally dominated, then I was like, all right, cool, let's see him fight somebody. But yeah. I mean, next time they can at least give us a rematch with him and Quillen, or at least give us him versus Andy Lee.
Yeah, because the Quillen fight, that was one of those shockers too, where he just went out there and threw a flurry of punches and finished it in the first round. So it's like you could do that with Quillen. You know you're capable of doing it with Mora, so why not go ahead and take it to him and go ahead and make it an easy night for yourself and finish it early and go home?
Yeah, Quillen's chin was always suspect, so I wasn't surprised when he got knocked down, but I thought he would get back up and fight like what happened against Andy Lee, but it was just like over, and I'm just like, okay. And like to me on paper, Quillen looks like the much bigger, buffer guy. Like when you look at shoulders, back, like he looks like the wider, like heavier guy. And Jacobs went out there and handled him, which makes me want to transition into our fight tonight, or today actually. It comes on HBO my time, 4 o'clock. So I think it should be about 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock your time, HBO. Like I said earlier, it being in England, they're ahead of us, so we'll get it in the afternoon. So that is the Kell Brook versus Triple G fight. And I looked at the weigh-in, Jarrell, and I put it on all our Facebook pages and our social media. And just like I said about Quillen and Jacobs, shoulders, chest, all that wise, like as far as wideness and like heaviness, it looks like Triple G's just has a bigger physique than him. But then I was also fooled when Jacobs fought Quillen, and that's what happened. So, I mean, we'll see. Some people said to think it'll go 10 rounds and Kell Brook will quit. And, you know, he seemed pumped up. Kell Brook came in at like 159.4, and Triple G came in at like 158.6. So they both made weight easily. But we'll see, man. Just, I don't know. Give me your analysis, your thoughts on this fight.
So I've been watching a few things, and if you didn't know too much about either of these fighters, you would say Kell Brook is going to come out the victor. There's a lot of people rooting for him, a lot of people saying that he is going to win this fight. And if you look at their training camps, he does look pretty good, and his mentality is where it needs to be. He's on the positive route. He believes that he could win. He's kind of absorbing that energy from that and carrying it to his practice. So he just looks good. He looks sharp. He looks ready to go. And I just hear things about the Triple G camp that he's not looking his best. And really, there's not too much excitement coming from that side. So either they're like on hush mode and just trying to go to work and not do too much of the press and worry about winning the fans over. Opposed to Kell Brook is trying to prove himself all the way around when it comes to proving that he could fight, proving that he can make weight, proving that he could size up. You know, there's a lot of things that he has to answer before this fight tonight, as long as trying to get the win.
Yeah, those are some good points. Let me ask you this question, Odrell. Okay, if Triple G wins this fight, where does he go? Where do we as boxing fans go from here? Because me personally, I'm tired of seeing him either fight somebody that's smaller than him or fighting bums. Kell Brook has went up. Obviously, Andre Ward has went up. We've named that list a couple times on the show. At what point are we going to see Triple G go up or face a quality opponent that we all are going to be like, okay, now Triple G has to actually fight. He can't just be in there showboating.
I think he'll need a big fight in his weight class right now before he, like a big name fight with money involved and all that before he moves up in any kind of weight class. That's what I think he'll do.
And I heard this rumor that Canelo and Triple G are supposed to fight before the year's over because it's in September or December. I'm not trying to be mean, but that's the biggest load of BS on the planet Earth. There's no way Canelo is going to get, if he wins this 154 against Liam Smith, he's going to go up and do that.
You know, they're building up for a big time fight, and right now those are the two biggest names in boxing, according to the fans. You know, obviously, other people have their own opinion on who a favorite is, but those are the two names that I've been hearing more, if any. So, if they are close in the weight class, moving up or down, I'm pretty sure they'll make that fight happen eventually. I don't know about before the year's up, because that's, you know, that's a
right.
that's a fight that you want to build up to.
Right. I think that's them selling us hot air, just trying to get us hype. I can see that happening in the spring, if it's going to happen. But I see in the back of my head, honestly, Jarrell, Canelo trying to live. I see him trying to live for a couple of years and get all the 154 belts, especially when HBO is falling out with Top Rank and also falling out with some of the other fighters. I see them, if they don't get along, I see them switching over to Showtime or doing something else where Canelo gets to live for a while. Because I could see Jarrell Canelo fighting a Charlo twin, a Julian Williams, before he'd be willing to step in the ring with Triple G, which I don't have a problem with. That's,
yeah.
I think Triple G needs to fight people his own size, or he needs to move up and stop trying to get guys from 147 and 154 to make weight. So that's my beef. Just like with the whole Adonis Stevenson, Sergey Kovalev thing, a lot of people to this day still call Adonis Stevenson a pussy, or he's scared. I said, see, this is where people are dumb and they don't understand the politics of boxing, Jarrell. When Stevenson heard Sergey say that, he said, okay, let's sign the contract now. Now, you know damn well when you go into a purse bid versus Al Haymon, you're not going to win. So Al Haymon won the purse bid, and you know what HBO and Kathy Duval did? They backed out and they said, no, we want his fights only on HBO. So that's what happened in that situation, is that Adonis Stevenson was never scared of Sergey Kovalev. Kovalev management, HBO, backed out because they didn't want to do it. And if people think that he was scared, then guess what, Jarrell? He was the mandatory. So guess what? He would never have the belt anymore. Because if you don't fight your mandatory, they strip the belt up. You just like Canelo had to give his belt up for Triple G. So yeah. I think people got to understand the politics of boxing, too, and not just jump ship and ride with whoever your favorite network is or whoever your favorite fighter is and just sit back and look and say, okay, well, if so-and-so's really scared, why does he still have the belt if he was a mandatory challenger? No, yeah. Politics got in the way.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of politics involved. It seems like it's a lot harder to set up the fights that you want, you know, opposed to the fights that will build up to that fight that you want. it's kind of like a soap opera, you know, they're building up to the climax of each fighter, and Canelo is not to the top of his career yet, so for him, they want to hold on to him, have him fight people that he probably knows. There's going to be a good fight that he's going to win up until that challenger does come, or that new big name that's equivalent to him comes, so they can have that big money fight, like the Manny Pacquiao versus Mayweather. It took them years to build up to that fight, and obviously we would have liked to seen it earlier, but that's the whole thing. If they would have gave it to us earlier, then what would have happened after that in between then and now? So it would have been one of those things where they put the two best fighters against each other, and then what happens after that? We're going to have five rematches, or or we're going to wait for the next person to show up, or what? What's going to go on? So I could see the promotional side of that and the marketing side of it, and how they prolong these fights that the fans really do want to see.
Yeah, Top Rank is anonymous for that five-fight rematch bull crap, especially with Manny Pacquiao versus Marquez. I thought that was going to go till 10. That got on my nerves. That drives me crazy with the double, triple, and quadruple rematches. It's like, man,
yeah.
Fight somebody else.
Yeah, it's like, would you want to see another Jacobs Mora? You know?
Right.
I would.
See, that. that's what drove me crazy when they're trying to sell you something like that and then get you, you know, three more of them like that. It's just like, dude, we already saw it twice. Let's see Jacobs fight. I don't even want to see him fight Quillen again. Fight Andy Lee. Find a way to kill the HBO beef and have him fight Triple G. I really don't care who he fights, but just fight somebody else other than the same people. That's it's getting old. Now, with the welterweight division, with PBC, they have a great tournament they could do. I mean, they got so many names from Adrian Broner to Sean Porter to Keith Thurman. Mayweather may come back and fight Adrian Broner. There's so many different fights that they can make that's going to be absolutely fun no matter what.
The welterweight division.
Right, the welterweight division. But like you say, the middleweight division, they need to come together and fight each other because, I mean, Al Haymon has all the welterweights pretty much except Timothy Bradley Jr. Bob Arum only has Timothy Bradley Jr. and Terrence Crawford. Other than that, I mean, they need to make that happen.
Yeah, those seem like exciting fights. I would love to see those. And if you have all the fighters to do it, then why not? Especially because the welterweight division is saving the game right now.
Yeah, sorry about that. I had a little technical difficulty. Yeah, we are ready to see just all these guys fight, Jarrell, from the heavyweights to everywhere else. What'd you say?
I said I agree with that, hands down. I would definitely like to see some bigger guys fight, the heavyweight, the cruiserweights, a few more light heavies, you know, just some guys I know that could punch, come with the knockout power.
Right. No more Triple G fighting guys smaller than him. Either he goes up in weight like everybody else, or vice versa. There's no more of this bull crap of this up and down mess, because I'm sick of it. I've had enough of it. They either going to fight or they're not going to fight.
I don't like it that it seems that they're ducking and dodging title fights. You know. Like, if I have the belt, I feel that my number one priority is to defend that belt. And so to move weight classes so you can hold on to it, I don't agree with that at all.
Right. Right, yeah, I don't agree with that at all. The only thing is I gave Canelo a little break because he fought at 154 all his life, and he just decided to fight at 160 because of that pressure HBO put on him because they needed a new HBO star, and he knew he had a shot to beat Miguel Cotto. But we all know Jarrell, Miguel Cotto was never really a middleweight.
Mm-hmm,
he just took that because that was an easy win. Sergio Martinez, it secured his legacy in the pound for pound list.
Yep.
So whereas his Triple G is like, he could go up and fight 168 because he already signed that fight to fight at 168. It's just that he stayed at 160 because he didn't want to get his ass kicked by Andre Ward. Which is fine to say that. But I hate how everybody says all these guys are chicken to Triple G. No, Triple G knows what he's doing. He's staying at that weight class because he knows what's going on.
Yeah.
We know.
It might not be him, you know. He might actually want to fight these guys, and that's why there's even conversation about it. Because somebody's got to be talking about wanting to go up to 168 and fight these guys, but his management, his promotional team might not agree with that because then every fight is going to be a battle, you know. When you go up in weight or go to your real weight class where it's a even playing field, then you're not going to dominate as much. So it might be his management and promotion team telling him to stick around in that weight class for a little while. Keep beating up people. Keep working on your skills, and then whenever you do get to that weight class, your skills will be able to manage the weight difference for you.
Yeah, you're right. Because I could tell you, Canelo definitely probably doesn't like nobody calling no punk, and he would fight him in a minute. But his management is probably trying to be like, yo, let's stack up these 154 belts and make you worth, you know, so much money on all your appearances rather than the other stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas well, gee, HBO might be saying, and I think HBO has something to do. They might be saying, you don't want to fight Ward yet. You want this, this, and that. Are you sure this is something you want to do? Same thing with Abel Sanchez. Just like I told you two shows ago, I was pissed the hell off, girl, when Abel Sanchez says, yeah, Kell Brook brings a lot more trouble than him. I'm like, man, shut the hell up, dog. Come on, man. Come on. He ain't scared to fight you, but they act like it's like Floyd Mayweather if he moves up to 160. Like, he don't bring that much. He'll compete. He's undefeated for a reason. He has an undefeated record. You got to respect that on any fighter, but, like, don't try to sell me that bull crap like, oh, this is a dangerous fight. Now, if he wins, then I'll be like, okay, the real deal, Holyfield. But we all know what's going to happen. It might be competitive the first four or five rounds, and then if his strength gets too much for him, we'll see what happens.
You know, I respect the undefeated record for sure after so long. And that comes in around the time whenever you do start fighting those high-profile, tough competitors, tough opponents. So anything before that, I don't really count the undefeated record as being that amazing because you're not fighting anybody. You're fighting people that you know that you're going to beat. So you're trying to build up that undefeated record to a certain point to where then you can get that big money fight. So the undefeated thing is kind of funny to me because, you know, I don't want to say you're buying your fights or you're cherry-picking your fights, but that could be the case sometimes.
Right, you hit that right on the head where it's like, yeah, you're buying your undefeated record in a way because it's kind of like it's not undefeated. If it's like Aaron Martinez where he was supposed to be the loser, like when he beat Devin Alexander and he beat Robert Guerrero, then that's one thing. But like you said, when you set up to win, then it's like, are you really undefeated or you set up to win? And with most of those undefeated guys, there's probably like three or four, there's probably one guy out of every 3 years that probably, calls a threat towards them. But for the most time, four out of the six guys they fight every so many years, they are supposed to win.
Yeah.
So that's go ahead.
You still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Go ahead.
Okay. You know, I look at the records, you know, of fighters, and sometimes the fighter that's not undefeated is the better fighter and the more exciting fighter and the one with the better career as well. So the records, to me, they don't mean anything as long as they're winning. As long as you're not a 50-50 fighter trying to come in and talk trash to people that are clearly better than you, I'll respect any type of winning record when it comes to those fighters that will get in the ring with anybody, regardless of what the management says, regardless of what their staff says, and they'll take that fight knowing it's going to be a tough fight. If they lose that way, I can still respect that because, you know, there has to be a winner, there has to be a loser. You know, nobody really cares about a draw, but when it comes to those fighters that are willing to put their neck on the line, put their undefeated record on the line and lose, I'll respect that more than I will somebody that's buying their fights. Because you're buying your fights, you know, you're going into it knowing that you're going to win. So are you even training hard for it? You know, come on. I want to see somebody that trains hard, that puts the effort in and comes out the victor getting what they deserve.
Exactly. And I think this fight, it wasn't necessarily bought to rail, but it was set up to do really well. One, because Triple G is known all over the world by boxing fans as one of the best.
Yep.
Two, United Kingdom, England is ridiculous. I mean ridiculous as far as, like, loving boxing, paying boxers, selling out Wembley Stadium. Like, they're just crazy in Ireland and all that stuff, United Kingdom, about boxing in that part of the world. Three, it was no way they were going to be able to sell that bullshit fight in Madison Square Garden. Like, yes, it's six names, but you know people in New York going to let you have it. Like, yo, what the hell is this guy he's fighting? Who? Bullcrap. Whereas the UK, they don't get that many HBO fights. So they're like, we get one of our top fighters. Like, it's not like the UK has, like, 30 or 40, like, big-name fighters like we do over here. Like, they have probably five fighters that are just like, okay, they got Kell Brook, they got Amir Khan, they obviously have Liam Smith, they have the, what's the heavyweight's name, Anthony Joshua, Tyson Fury, and a couple more. So they, like, they could count on both of their hands their big-name guys. So when their big-name guys actually get a fight against another big-name guy, whether somebody's stretching the weight class or not, they're going to take that because that's money for the UK. It's going to be sold out. It's going to be on Sky Sports, and that's better publicity for them. And Triple G knew he was going to get a big paycheck without having to worry about pay-per-view because at this point, HBO thought Triple G would be all pay-per-view. But at this point, they know that, you know, his last review against David Lemieux did so horribly, they ain't going to be so stupid. And it was funny to me because last year, Jarrell, they tried to make that excuse for him saying, well, it would have been college football season and all this other stuff. He only sold 95,000 in. I say, yeah, but y'all said Floyd's pay-per-view against Andre Berto didn't sell that well, and it sold a 500,000 damn views, and that was during football season.
Yeah.
Which is still more than just because Floyd sold a million every time, just because he sold a 500,000, now that's not good. When that's actually better than everybody else's stuff, like for the last 10 years, Pacquiao can't get past 300,000. I don't think Canelo and Khan got past 300,000. So it's not like these views were doing that good. Like, so it's like that was still the best pay-per-view of the year other than Canelo Cotto, but that was going to do good because you got Mexican fans and Puerto Rican fans. I mean, that's easy to sell at. Just like if Danny Garcia was to fight, Manny Pacquiao, that would be a crazy pay-per-view fight, something like that.
Yeah, it took so long for Floyd to build up his legacy and to bring those views in and to bring that big money in. It's gonna take an extremely exciting fighter to grab that attention of those people that were on the Mayweather bandwagon fan. So Triple G, I don't know if he has that star power. He doesn't have the flash off camera. He doesn't have that type of personality that's going to attract too many people's attention. So I just don't – that might have to do with the views and why he can't bring them in just because his style and flash outside the ring.
Right, and I think HBO and Showtime have to realize that, Jarrell, because it's like in every era there's going to be one or two pay-per-view stars. When me and you were real little kids, the pay-per-view stars were Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield. And then every once in a while, you got a guy who was okay fighting on the undercard. But for the most part, guys were regular fighters on HBO, which is good because if you're an HBO or a Showtime fighter, you're still getting a crap load of money because people pay their subscriptions to see you. But every era, you only want to have one or two guys that can foot the pay-per-view bill. You know, the last 10 years, it's been Pacquiao Mayweather. Those have been the two guys that's been footing the bill. Before that, it was Roy Jones. You know, before Roy Jones, it was Lennox Lewis, Tyson, you know, Holyfield.
Yeah.
Now we're waiting on the next era. Canelo.
Yeah, waiting on the next
person. What'd you say?
I said, yeah, we're waiting on the next person. I think the new social media outlets and the way they've been promoting these more recent fights, I think that's very smart with the, you know, going live on Facebook and going live with the training camps and letting people see the build up to the fight. I think that's the most important thing right now when it comes to the boxing promotions, because you don't really know the names of some of these fighters. So it's very smart that they're letting the cameras into these fighters' personal life and their training camps just to make it more like a soap opera or a story building up to the actual fight.
Speaking of that, did you see the little preview for Liam Smith versus Canelo? Did you see that? That's on HBO. And if you don't have HBO, it's on HBO's YouTube channel where they showed all-access Liam Smith and Canelo. It was about 30 minutes. That was actually pretty good, just hearing both of their stories, seeing both of the cities that they grew up in.
Yeah, those shows like that can persuade you to a different fighter too. You might be going for one fighter before the fight starts, and then watching a show like that, you might get interested in another fighter. So it's good for everybody in the sport of boxing. It's kind of like what happened with me. You know, at first I started off thinking, you know, Triple G is going to dominate this fight. But then you kind of look more like the emotional side of it and, you know, just who's feeling better about the fight. And then you're like, well, you know, Kell Brook is feeling good for a reason. It can't be for no reason that he's feeling that good. He must be very confident in his size, skills, and abilities to win this fight tonight. So you never know when the emotion comes in.
But here's the key, Jarrell. Just like you said, the hype and the buildup. Who was the person who created 247 on HBO?
Who did that?
Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah. 24/7 access, right?
That's what I'm saying.
That's why he's got the money too, right? You know, why haven't other fighters thought about that?
But that shows you he understood how to sell a fight. Think about it. And about 10 years ago, all you got was this, Jarrell. You got a snippet saying this is coming up next week on HBO. This is next coming up on HBO pay-per-view. And you had to hear about it, and that was it. Then Floyd said, hey, man, put an all-access on about me and my opponent and our life and our struggle in the middle of a week at like 9 o'clock on a Wednesday. So in the middle of the week when you're just chilling at home and you think that you ain't got no choice but to watch whatever's on FX or whatever bullcrap series on, you sit there and say, oh, crap, it's a HBO all-access thing on. That makes people go crazy. Then what else he did was right after the fight, he said, everybody stay tuned. They still do this to the day, Jarrell. They say, everybody stay tuned for a special edition of all-access after this fight. So while you already watch HBO boxing, you got an extra treat to see the all-access. That promoted the fight right there. That made you want to buy it right there. You couldn't wait.
For sure. For sure. That's a very smart marketing strategy. That's why he's the man. You know, that's why he has that much money. He knows how to sell himself, and he's continually trying to find ways to keep his name in the mix. I mean, he's been retired for how long now, and people are still talking about him. Like, you know, like he never left the game. So you have to know how to sell yourself and market yourself to where you could last, even without the boxing. And he's mastered that as well. So a genius.
And by the way, there's rumors circulating right now talking about Adrian Broner might be his 50th. And me and you talked about that before, and we know that that's going to do well. That doesn't happen. Like, it's almost like the Pacquiao, what's his name? That doesn't need a press conference. That's going to sell half a million to a million pay-per-view buys just by itself, just being the blood, all the stuff in between. They ain't even going to have to hype that up like that. It's just going to be sold.
Well, they kind of are on the low, you know, because you've been hearing Adrian Broner's name a lot. Like that fight last night, you know, he was in the ring. The reporters had to come talk to him and see what he said to Robert to get the win at the end. You know, win that 11th, 12th round. So they've been bringing Broner in, and his name has been out there a lot for, you know, not have anything going on right now. So. You know, like he put, what, 10,000 on the fight tonight or something like that?
What did you say?
He's supposed to put a large amount of money on this fight tonight. And so it's like, why do people know that? Why do people know what's going on with Broner constantly? So you might be right about that. They might be, you know, working on Broner. So when Mayweather does decide to make that fight happen, it will be a big time selling pay per view.
And I know that's gonna piss HBO off because Canelo could fight somebody like Marvin Hagler from the damn 80s and it wouldn't sell as much as that fight.
No.
If Canelo Triple G head to head with Mayweather Broner, Mayweather Broner blows them out pay per view sales by remember he tried that dumb stuff a couple years ago and said I'm fighting on Cinco de Mayo. Everybody knows Floyd started that tradition of fighting on Cinco de Mayo. That's another smart strategy by Floyd. Always fighting on Cinco de Mayo and on Mexican Independence Day. That was another reason that made his stuff smart. But the other funny thing was I thought it was funny when Canelo was like, yeah, I'm the next star, I'm about to do it. And then HBO went and put him down and just said, look, man, there's no way you're going to outsell. That's why they pushed that Cotto fight, man. There's no way you're going to outsell any Pacquiao versus effing Floyd Mayweather. Just sit that down. That's just not happening. Like,
yeah.
You have no chance. No chance. It's like a mid-major basketball team playing Kansas or playing Duke at home in the beginning of the season. Like, they played all season to jump on somebody's ass. So there's no way that you're coming up in there and you're going to have a competition.
Well, both of those guys, Canelo and Triple G, they just don't have that star power effect. Like, if they walked into the room, I don't think they would grab everybody's attention. You know, I'd be like, oh, that's Triple G. Oh, that's Canelo. But they don't have, like, that Mike Tyson, which is everybody – wants to be like Mike, or everybody either following you or just interested in you or why you are the way you are. It has nothing to do with boxing. It has everything to do with their personality. And both of them just have a boring, plain personality, you know. Maybe it might be a language barrier, or maybe they just don't have that shine to them.
Exactly. Yep, they don't have that star power. But, yeah, man, let's get up out of here, man. Make sure you share the episode on all social media. Anybody else, just share the podcast. I got Triple G winning in 10, but I hope Kell Brook gives him a good fight. Fight will start here in about about 5 hours exactly. You don't have to wait all damn night. And hopefully you don't have to wait till midnight or 1 a.m. my time to watch the damn fight.
I'm thinking Triple G's gonna come out with the win, but that's only because Brooks has a problem with backpedaling with his hands down, and I think that's gonna be the thing that loses it for him. He likes to take those two big steps with his hands down. And if Triple G picks up on that, it's going to be a wrap. But other than that, when it comes to the emotional side and when it comes to who I think is going to bring the fight and bring the heart and actually try and put on a show and win, I think it's going to be Kell Brook because he has a lot to prove.
Yeah. Yep, great analogy, man. I'm ready to watch it.
I think it's going to be a good one.
You know where I'm at. You know you can find me out on Facebook and Twitter. Holler at the people, Jarrell. Let's get out of here. Let's get ready to watch this good fight. And then next weekend, we got another one where we're going to be watching a fight in Jerry's World.
Oh, that's nice. That's hometown right there.
That's what I'm saying. That's something we supposed to have you fly just for that. We supposed to have you fly back there just for that one.
Just for that one. I wouldn't mind that. Everybody likes going to Jerry's World.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a good fight there too.
You know what I'm saying? That's where you want to fight at. You want to fight in Jerry's World. That's amazing. But yeah, man, go ahead and holler at the people. I'm out, man. Go ahead,
All right, thanks for listening in. Jarrell Young, check me out on YouTube. I got all kinds of fitness stuff on there, boxing stuff. Get in shape. Get healthy.
All right, y'all. Twitter.com/NYC Boxing Fans. Texas Boxing Fans. I'm out. Catch y'all next week.